Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
How about this? A drop in fatal occupational injuries. We'll run it all down. The Biden economy, what the mainstream media is not telling you. And today on the show, the Ohio AFL-CIO and Labor's Local 860. Welcome to the Tuesday, January 4th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. First Tuesday of the new month and the new year, and that means Tim Berg is going to be on the show today. Tim is president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, been a president for a long time, at least 10, 11 years right now. And today he's going to talk about two things: redistricting, which is a topic we have addressed several times on the show, and this is a case that is now before the Ohio Supreme Court. The Ohio Supreme Court is deliberating over two sets of lawsuits. One set challenging the new state legislative maps. The other set challenging the new congressional map. Lawsuits are similar, contending that the maps illegally gerrymander the state in favor of Republicans. And this is despite new state redistricting rules sold to voters as anti-gerrymandering reforms. In fact, the Republicans that are in control of the legislature and also the commission, has seven members on it, five of them Republicans, two of them Democrats. And I've said this to Tim several times. Well, what did you expect when you have a majority that wants to remain a majority? So we'll take a look at the court case and figure out where this is going to go. In the meantime, lawmakers have moved the filing deadline for congressional candidates to March 2nd, which could buy them more time. Previously, it was about a month or two before that. Tim could give us the exact date when we get him on the show. We're also going to talk about the state legislative agenda. New year, you know, well, it is an election year, and there's always one or two lawmakers, usually in the red parts of the state, which is a big chunk of the state today, that would like to eliminate prevailing wage on public projects, go right to work. We'll see if any of that is simmering. And depending on time, we'll see if any of that infrastructure money is coming into the state of Ohio. I'm talking about the Bipartisan Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which is going to pump in a lot of money, millions, if not billions of dollars, into the state. And if you go to the AFL-CIO national page, they have a state-by-state rundown of how much money each state is going to get. Colin Sicon will be joining us as our second guest on the show, and he comes to us from Labor's Local 860. And 860 is part of the national group LIUNA, presenting sponsor of America's Workforce. There's two things we're going to get into. We'll touch on infrastructure, decades in the making. We'll talk about what's in it for Labor's 860. They have over 4,000 members and growing much in the public sector, and we're going to zero in on that, too, because there is a problem in the Cuyahoga County Juvenile Court. They had a contract, negotiated contract, with a number of the workers there. And this goes back almost 2 years. And they let the contract expire. And there's been a number of problems at the juvenile court. Riots, as a matter of fact. Workers getting injured. And they're passing the blame. So Colin has been on that issue, tooth and nail, and he'll spell out the latest and where they see this will go in 2022. The other issue we're going to get into is construction zones. And I got some facts and figures for you. In 2019, this is nationally now, in 2019, 842 people were killed. 39,100 people were injured in work zone crashes. Work zone crashes are defined as taking place within the boundaries of a work zone or on an approach to or exit from a work zone due to activities, behaviors, or controls related to traffic moving through the boundaries of that work zone. Often the case is speeding. How many times you see a work zone coming up and there's signs saying, slow down. In fact, fines could be doubled, and they are doubled. People don't pay attention. Of those 842 fatalities, 479 were in construction zones. 307 were in work zones of an unknown type. 42 were in maintenance zones. 14 were in a utility zone. Work zone deaths reached a high back in 2002, 20 years ago, 1,186. The fewest work zone deaths occurred in 2010 with 586 deaths. And since 2010, going back 12 years, work zone deaths have actually increased by 44%. So we'll touch on that. The Labor's 860. We'll play a commercial that aired on social media for quite some time dealing with highway safety, work zone, construction zones, all that. Just to call attention to the safety of the people working in those areas. I mean, the whole idea is you go to work. Hopefully you'll come back at the end of the day. Got some interesting news regarding that, occupational deaths. And this is courtesy of our labor writer, Mark Grunberg. The number of fatal occupational deaths fell sharply in the United States in 2020 compared to the year before. This according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Some 4,764 workers died from on-the-job injuries and illnesses that year, which is down from 5,333 in 2019. The death rate declined from 3.5 deaths per 1,000 workers in 2019 to 3.4 per 100,000 in 2020. The Census of Fatal Occupational Injuries Data, that's the report, the name of the report, Census of Fatal Occupational Injuries Data, which takes about a year to compile and sort out, do not specifically reflect the impact of the pandemic, which, of course, raged through the year even before it was officially declared on March 13th of 2020. This is what the study says. Fatal occupational illnesses, including COVID-19, are out of scope for the study unless precipitated by an acute injury. So that equation isn't part of this study. It is possible a COVID-19 related fatality resulting from an acute injury may be in scope and appear in the file. However, information on COVID-19 related fatalities in source data is inconsistent and often unavailable. Therefore, according to the story, the Bureau of Labor Statistics will not attempt to publish COVID-19 specific data. Interesting. Now, a prior survey of non-fatal injuries and illnesses revealed the impact in rates of such ailments in hospitals and nursing homes. Listen to this. Workforce numbers crashed in March and April of 2020 as half the economy shut down trying to combat the community spread of the virus. The number of unemployed skyrocketed and stayed high through the year. The data, again, I'm quoting from the Census of Non-Fatal Occupational Injuries data released on November 3rd, showed enormous rates of injuries and illnesses among nurses in 2020, just as National Nurses United, the leading union for RNs, keeps finding in its reports. Now, that survey showed rates of 15.7 non-fatal injuries and illnesses per 100 workers in nursing homes, with the highest illness rate, 17.6 per 100, in the largest nursing homes. The injury and illness rate for hospitals was 7.7 per 100 workers, with little variation depending on the size of the hospital. And while private employers reported a sharp drop in non-fatal injuries from 2.7 million total in 2019 to 2.1 million in 2020, total reported illness cases more than quadrupled to 544,000 cases, up from 127,000. Now, that increase was driven by a nearly 4,000% increase in employer-reported respiratory illness cases in 2020. And that, my friends, is the virus. There's no question the virus caused all those respiratory injuries. In the latest release on the fatalities, the government, that's the Bureau of Labor Statistics, reported women workers accounted for 8.1% of all work-caused deaths in 2020, but 16.3% of murders at work. BLS did not say who killed the women workers, but National Nurses United repeatedly discusses violence on the job, including deaths, and campaigns for federal rules forcing hospitals and nursing homes to institute and enforce protection plans in agreement with worker reps. The Democratic-run House passed their bill twice. The evenly split Senate was pigeonholed on it so far, so nothing advance in that legislation. Interesting. Again, this is courtesy of Mark Gruenberg, our labor writer, taking a look at fatal as well as non-fatal occupational deaths for the year 2020. But the fact that the pandemic happened is not necessarily relevant to the survey. I'm sure more will be coming out on that. Biden's presidency. You probably heard a lot, especially if you watch Fox News, how horrible things have been. Even on CNN, I mean, they've been beating up on Biden for such a long time. Inflation, I mean, there's a lot of problems in the administration. Let's be honest here. Supply chain, this new variant that is getting a lot of people sick. It's out of control. Can't find testing kits anywhere. But when it comes to the economy, listen to this. As vaccinated people started to venture out, support for consumers bolstered U.S. companies, which by the end of last year, which was just last week, were showing profit margins higher than they've been since 1950 at 15%. So we're in the middle of a pandemic, still raging, and companies in America are making a whole lot of money, whole lot of money. Get this, companies reduced their debt, which translated to a very strong stock market. In February, Biden's first month in office, the jobless rate was 6.2%. Last month, dropped to 4.2%. I mean, 2 percentage points, which means 4.1 million jobs were created in Joe Biden's administration the first year. More than were created in the 12 years of the Trump and George W. Bush administrations combined. In November, Congress passed the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill that will repair bridges and roads and get broadband to places that still don't have it. And the talks continue on the larger package. I'm talking about the Build Back Better bill. And many are saying eventually they're going to whittle it down, but it's going to pass. Now, Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal are reporting that U.S. economic output jumped more than 7% in the last 3 months of 2021. Overall growth for last year should be about 6%. Economists predict growth of around 4% this year, the highest numbers the U.S. has seen in decades. And China? We often take a look at China. Oh, they're growing, they're growing. Their growth was 4%. Same as the United States. The European Union, 2%. 2%. So the bottom line is the United States is outperforming the world by the biggest margin in the 21st century. Where's the mainstream media on that? I don't know. That's why we have America's workforce, I guess. All right. We have to take a break. Tim Berger, the Ohio AFL-CIO, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, longtime contributor to America's Workforce, and that would be Mr. Timothy Berger, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. Tim Berger, welcome back to the show, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Flash. Thanks for having me.
All right. Last time, actually, last couple of times you and I talked, we zeroed in on these congressional maps and legislative maps, redistricting. And maybe you could refresh our listeners on what's at play here. I mean, the voters spoke, but apparently the lawmakers just ain't listening. So walk me through this, Tim.
Yeah, all eyes are on what the Ohio Supreme Court is going to do, how they're going to rule on two cases, the litigation on how the state legislative maps have been drawn and the litigation on how the congressional maps have been drawn. In 2015, voters said, we don't like these gerrymandered maps, these rigged maps. So for the state house, the 99 state house seats, the 33 state Senate seats, we're going to redo it and put a fairness component throughout the process. So the Republicans who were in charge, we supported these constitutional amendments, by the way, and they passed with over 70% of the vote. And we were hopeful that those in charge would follow the Constitution, but that's not happened. So the state legislative maps are more rigged than the ones we've been under the last 10 years. And so those have been litigated. Oral arguments have been heard, waiting now in the Ohio Supreme Court to rule. And then just last Tuesday, the Ohio Supreme Court heard oral arguments on the congressional maps. And the congressional maps, we lose a congressional seat in Ohio. We go from 16 congressional seats to 15. Because our population is not kept up with the rest of the country. And these new maps are more gerrymandered than the ones we're currently under, different reasons. When you look at Hamilton County, just as one example, if you're going to split Hamilton County up into three different districts, there's a reason for that, and that's to try to keep it in Republican hands. So it's not the spirit and the intent of the Constitution. The evidence, we believe, is overwhelming that has not been followed. The will of the voters not been followed. So All eyes are on what the Supreme Court's going to do, and this makes a huge impact on the state of Ohio, how we're being governed, the laws that are being passed. And under the last 10 years, under these rigged maps, we've seen the most anti-worker, anti-consumer legislation pass that we've seen in anybody's memory. So it's terribly important, and we're all waiting to see what the Ohio Supreme Court's going to do with them.
You mentioned the court heard this a week ago. Did they just look into the congressional maps, but also the legislative maps, or is that a separate court case?
Yeah, two separate court cases. They heard the state legislative maps about 5 weeks ago or thereabouts. So we're expecting a ruling. It wouldn't surprise me if we get a ruling first on the state legislative maps, since they've had that deliberation longer, and the congressional maps maybe soon after. But the reality is the clock is ticking, and those that are seeking to run for state legislative office or congressional office need to know which districts they live in and which districts they're going to run in. And the filing deadlines for that are fast approaching. In fact, early February and early March are the deadline dates for filing as a candidate for the state legislative races and the congressional races, respectively.
Tim, do the lawmakers have to live in the district they want to represent, right? Isn't that the case?
You have to have, you know, that there's been a lot of talk about that, right? I live here, but I own a property here, right? But theoretically, you're supposed to live in the district, right? And, you know, the reality of this thing is, it's just from organized labor's perspective. I mean, why are we interested in this? Well, we see attack after attack on unemployment compensation, injured worker compensation, collective bargaining, prevailing wage, right to work, all those things that I come on this program and talk about, unfortunately, on a regular basis over the last 10 years. We've got to move away from that. And when you have all these outside independent groups looking at what's happening at redistricting across the country, and in particular what's happening in Ohio, and they're giving us a failing grade for these maps. In fact, Princeton University, who does a deep study into these redistricting approaches, gave Ohio's redistricting effort, congressional map effort, an overall grade of an F. So you can go to princeton.edu and take a look at that one if you're interested. But it's terribly important, because the folks that how the districts are set up determines who's in there. All we're asking for in organized labor is just give us some basic fairness. Give us some basic competitiveness, and we'll make the argument on our issues. We'll make the argument that hardworking middle-class families are the backbone of the state, the backbone of the economy, and quit passing laws and rules that work against them, but actually help them succeed and advance and expand the middle class. And we're confident that just given fair districts, we'll accomplish that.
Okay, there's two cases here again, legislative maps and the congressional maps. Are they equally as bad? Do they gerrymander them to the point where they have control, they being the Republican Party in the state of Ohio?
Yeah, right. Is the smell as bad on both? You know, the kind of the water cooler talk is the state legislative maps are so out of bounds that it's absurd. The congressional maps, because there's only 15 seats you have to deal with, it's maybe doesn't look as bad, right, when you look at the maps.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the oral arguments, read the briefs, and the evidence is pretty darn overwhelming that the will of the voters has been circumvented here, and the basic component of proportional fairness has been completely thrown out the window on both.
And to clarify that, I want to paint a picture. If you take a look, if you poll the parties in the state of Ohio, you'd probably find, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, wouldn't you say it's about 55, maybe 56% Republican and say 44-45% Democrat? Wouldn't you say that's about accurate, Tim?
Well, the lawmakers were asked to look at over the last 10 years, when you look at statewide elections, who has the advantage? Let's use that as a guidepost. And you're real close, Flash. It's 54-46.
Okay.
So about an eight-point Republican partisan advantage. So you would then be able to do the math, extract this, and these maps should give the Republicans an 8-point partisan advantage, best you can. It's not that easy to, you know, cut up all these districts and things, but should give the Republicans an 8-point advantage. It certainly shouldn't give them a 40 and 50-point advantage, right? So that's what we're dealing with here. It's pretty blatant. We'll see if they get away with it. I have faith in, you know, the Ohio Supreme Court, that when you look at the facts, when you look at the evidence, when you look at what the voters, what they had to say in 2015 and 2018, and what the Sixth Circuit appellate court said on these congressional maps just a couple years ago, they ruled them unconstitutional or illegal or gerrymandered, but they were getting ready up on the redistricting, new redistricting, so they just basically let it go. And this was a Republican appellate court that ruled unanimously on that a few years ago. So facts are facts. Evidence is overwhelming. So we're hopeful that the Supreme Court will see it that way also.
All right. Two cases. And we should hopefully hear something on the legislative maps. And then the congressional maps in that case was heard a week ago today. One more question on this issue. All right, whatever the Supreme Court comes up with, are we done there? The Ohio Supreme Court, are we done, or does it go to the U.S. Supreme Court? I'm just wondering about that.
Yeah, well, the U.S. Supreme Court has already said they're not interested in these state legislative cases. Now, the Supreme Court asked the respondents, where are we? If we determine these maps aren't right, aren't legal, then where do we go? So the question would be is, how does the Supreme Court rule? Do they rule that these maps are no good? And if so, how prescriptive do they become? We don't believe that the federal courts are a remedy. So it would stay right here in Ohio. And, you know, it's just a matter of what the Supreme Court says the remedy is in state, which would be likely have the legislature or the redistricting commission go back quickly, move new maps back over, and see if they can work something out without litigation.
Again, we have to follow the Constitution. This is the will of the people, and we have to make sure that the people get what they actually voted for. And again, wasn't it 70% margin on that, the votes that go back a couple of years ago on this issue?
Yeah, on both constitutional amendments, the state legislative maps in 2015 that went before the people, and the congressional maps in 2018, the amendment that went before the people, over 70% approved of both new processes, of which we and many organizations endorsed, and it was done in a bipartisan fashion. And there should be an expectation that when you come to an agreement that your bond and organized labor, Flash, you know, your bond is your word.
Right.
And in this case, that's not happened. And it's extremely disappointing and not terribly shocking, unfortunately, that the party in power is ignoring the will of the vote.
And we're just fighting to be fair. That's what this is all about. Fighting to be fair. All right. You mentioned what's going on in legislatures here, and well, the Ohio legislature, obviously, since you're with the Ohio AFL-CIO, and you brought up the fact that you got these crazy lawmakers that keep on coming out saying, oh, we got to go right to work. West Virginia did it. Kentucky did it. Indiana did it. Any of that on the agenda this year? I know it's kind of early. It's only January 4th, but what are you hearing right now?
Well, it would surprise no one that somebody on the Republican side introduces these anti-union, anti-worker proposals, that in every state in which they do become law, it drives down wages, it drives down safe working conditions, it drives down retirement security, all those things. So we do anticipate that there'll be some introduction of these anti-worker policies. I'm hopeful that after Senate Bill 5, where we said if you're going to keep going forward with these extreme policies, we're going to go to the voters and overturn it. So I'm hopeful that they won't go anywhere. I think what we'll see probably flash is more of the same of what we saw in 2021, which is more siphoning off of public education funds for private school vouchers and even homeschooling taxpayer money. Expand eligibility and expand money into private education, K through 12 education. Probably see more of those policies being pushed hard by the right, and more effort that we saw in 2021 to limit the executive branch's powers to support science and try to keep us safe from, you know, a pandemic. So I think you'll see more of that. I think you'll see, you know, extreme measures to mess with unemployment compensation and injured workers' compensation, maybe even prevailing wage. So pretty much more of the same. Sprinkle in a few unnecessary tax breaks for the well-off, and that's probably what we have to look forward to this year. But we're going to continue to advance an agenda that you know, really stands up for working people, gets us to work, you know, building things and making things and in all sectors of the economy. And that's what we're going to continue to advance. And that's what Ohioans, I believe, want to see the General Assembly engaged in.
Yeah, I hear you, brother. Workers first. That's what it's all about. All right, my friend, you take care. Hopefully next time we have a conversation, we'll get some indication of what's going on with redistricting from the Ohio Supreme Court. All right. And
I think we'll hear soon.
Yeah, and we'll probably have some more information, too, on the dollars coming in from that infrastructure bill. I know it's kind of premature right now, but it'll be good when we link up again. So you take care, my friend. Keep up the fight in Columbus. And, again, Happy New Year to you and your staff down there, all right?
Okay. Thank you, Flash.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Colin Sicon on behalf of Labor's Local 860 right here on America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
You're listening to America's Workforce and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 6 platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings. Let's go to line number 2 right now. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Colin Sicon, organizer with Labor's Local 860. And 860 is part of LIUNA, Labor's Union, Labor's International Union of North America, presenting sponsor of America's Workforce. And 860 has about 4,000 members in Northeastern Ohio. And Colin primarily deals with the public sector, and they got a problem with the juvenile court. Hey, Colin, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Hey, we're doing all right, Flash. Thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. Hey, the op-ed that you did on Cleveland.com a couple of months ago was really, really good. Hopefully you got some good reaction on that. But, you and I have had several conversations about what has happened and what has not happened at the juvenile court. There was a contract there, a good contract for the workers, for many of the workers, and apparently some of the judges decided not to continue it. Why don't you refresh us on what happened and hopefully where we're going with this situation? Go ahead, Colin.
Yeah, all right, Flash. So, yes, we have represented the workers at the Cuyahoga County Juvenile Court and Detention Center for several years, over several contracts. And this last round of contract negotiations, all six of the judges unanimously decided to terminate any contracts with the union. So, you know, at first we thought it was the administrative judge, but now in court and on social media, they have proclaimed that this was a unanimous decision. So all right, we are currently still fighting.
And in the meantime, I guess conditions aren't very healthy. I don't know if that's the correct word, but there's been problems there, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, anyone who watches the news here in Cleveland, sadly, has seen that facility on the news time and time and time again. There are constant acts of violence going on there. You pretty much have to have your head in the sand to not know what's going on there.
Now, was there acts of violence before before the contract expired? Was there a history of problems there at the facility or what?
Well, in any kind of facility like that, you are going to have some issues. But since Local 860 has been put out, the acts of violence have risen greatly. And, you know, it leads one to believe that in the court's attempt at union busting, what they've actually done is driven staffing levels to a low, which has pretty much set the stage for a lot of these acts of violence and injuries to happen.
Okay. When you say the staffing levels are low, I mean, where were they? Where are they now? Where should they be right now, Colin?
Right now, I'm not exactly sure where they are at. When we left, ideally, we should have had about 80 detention officers. At our greatest point, we had 80. And when we were thrown out, I believe we were just under 50.
Okay.
So that's quite a disparity. And yeah, by the court's own admission and metrics, you know, they wrote a letter to the safety director, Bob Corey, asking for money to give guards more money to attract candidates. Their own metrics said that from January 1st of 2020 to June 30th of 2021, there were a total 611 incidents of violence.
Oh my.
And yeah, I mean, and they actually, with their own metrics, broke it down into 140 fights, 130 threats to staff, 52 group disturbances, 117 youth on youth assaults. I mean, this place is a house of pain.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, what's the county doing about that? They can't let this go. What, all they're going to do is increase the pay for guards and try to get more guards there, or what?
Well, and that's part of our frustration. You know, tackling this monster, we've learned a lot. And we found out that this court is actually legislated outside of the county executive. So this court is running completely unchecked.
Huh. So what's the game plan for 860 here? You've been out of it for, what is it, for how long now? About a year and a half, 2 years?
It was a year on December 1st.
A year on December 1st, okay. So
yeah, so our plan is to continue fighting in our battle in court for fair representation of the men and women who work there. We need to make sure that these people are getting the proper amount of training. That was another major issue we had with the court. Before they threw us out, they got rid of the training that we had secured in our contract in favor of their own in-house, not nationally accredited training, which I can't tell anything about it because there's no accreditation attached that I know of.
I see. You mentioned this issue is in the courts right now. Is that right?
Yes. So, yes, that is correct. Right now we are in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, and we are also in common pleas.
Now, is there a chance that the court could say we have to reinstate the union here to make things better? Is that a possibility, Colin?
Well, you know, it's definitely a possibility, but I'm going to tell you, from my history with the court over the last couple of years, they have great difficulty admitting when they're wrong and accepting help. So I think the only way we're going to get back there is under a judge's decree.
I gotcha. All right. What can the community do right now? I mean, you've been very vocal about this on social media. You're really good job. I really congratulate you on that. Outside of that, community support, we got this radio and podcast and all that. What needs to be done here, Colin?
Well, I'm going to tell you, we've really started to kind of shift a little bit here. I've actually been contacted by several community groups and civic leaders in the community. There are some coalitions out there. There's the Children's Law Center and Justice for Our Youth Task Force. And these are concerned citizens who have talked to people on the inside, both residents and employees, and found out what's going on. And, you know, when they hear the horror stories of what goes on in there, they're appalled. So what we're doing now is starting to partner up with a lot more of these community based organizations, because in all reality, there's such an intersectionality of our causes. You know, we want our people to be in there and trained and well paid. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't realize that directly matriculates down to how those children are cared for.
Right.
And we're starting to put this together with the community, and I think that we are going to start to gather more steam and more momentum working with all the shareholders in the community, not just trying to take this on as a labor issue.
Well, Colin, you got a good union behind you. You know that, Local 860. I know you primarily deal with highway and utilities, construction, things of that nature, but you've been really, really predominant in the public sector, and hopefully with enough voices on this issue, you'll get to some resolve. Colin, can you stay with us for another segment here on the show? I want to talk about the infrastructure bill and what it's going to mean to Northeastern Ohio. Can we do that?
I would love to.
All right. Labors860.com is a website, by the way. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, connecting people with employment. You can find more at ulagency.org. In fact, Dave Meginhardt, their executive director, longtime executive director, will be on the show tomorrow. Right now, we have Colin Sicon joining us, and he comes to us from Labor's 860, labors860.com. And this union has served the heavy highway and utilities construction trades in Ohio's Cuyahoga, Lake, and Geauga counties going back to 1937. And they have about 4,000 active members, over 500 retirees, along with a 98% market share, doing really well. And one thing they do well is call attention to work zone safety. And Colin, I'm going to play, this is right from your website. Again, if you go to labors860.com, there's a slew of public service announcements, all produced by BMA Media, I might add, to talk about the importance of work zone safety. Let's listen here on the show.
Most of us feel pretty safe when we're at work. But every year, highway and utility workers are injured or killed on the job. That's because drivers aren't careful and don't slow down when they approach work zones. Think about it. How would you like it if someone drove through your workplace at 65 miles an hour? Work zone crews are just doing their job. Let them work. Let them live.
That's what it's all about. You expect to come home at the end of the day. And so many people today, they're so distracted. And I have to blame the smartphones, because everybody, when the phone rings or somebody texts you, oh, I got to answer this right away. They're not paying attention. And next thing, an accident happens. Colin, I appreciate what 860 has done on this, and going forward, I mean, right now it's January, and I know you hit this pretty hard, especially in the spring when you see a lot of construction starting to kick up. But how effective, in your estimation, has this campaign been over the years? You've been doing this for a long time, but how do you gauge it? What's your thoughts on that?
You know, that's a great question, Flash. We have been doing it a while, and we need to. Now, as far as the gauge, I'm going to tell you, what I gauge it on, honestly, are how many people I know in my personal life who I don't work with professionally who tell me they've seen things like our billboards around town about slowing down in work zones. And if people who aren't involved in construction are starting to sit up and take notice and bring these things up to me, we're obviously reaching people. And that's the important thing, is just the general awareness.
Yeah.
As someone who worked on the roads, I'm going to tell you, I've had a close call. I mean, I don't know anyone in my line of work who's worked on the roads who hasn't had a car or truck knock down, you know, navigator cones or barrels, or come into the zone. And I agree with you. The phones, as wonderful as they are with technology, they are probably the biggest Achilles heel to road construction.
Oh, yeah, and especially you add kids in the car. I mean, so many things can happen because there's too darn many distracted drivers on the road. I at the top of the show, I went online yesterday, and I ran down some numbers. And going back in 2019, 842 people. This is nationally, Colin. 842 people were killed. Over 39,000 people were injured in work zone crashes. And apparently, the deaths reached a high going back to 2002, so that'd be 20 years ago, at just shy of 1,200. And it decreased after that, but in the last 10, 12 years, work zone deaths have increased by 44%.
Yeah.
So it's important to get the word out there. Now, I know they've doubled the fines in a lot of those areas. I hope that's working. You hear anything about that, Colin?
I have not heard anything directly about the upping of the fines, but I will say that, unfortunately, that's what it takes. It takes for it to really affect people in a negative way for them to, you know, take the corrective behaviors. Hopefully it's just someone will know someone who got fined, and that slows those other people down.
I know. You know, I equate that to, there's crazy fights that happen on airlines today. stewardesses, pilots attacked, and they have, and the fine's $35,000. Now, to me, you know, I'd sit in my seat and be really, really quiet. But some people just don't get the message, even when there's a $35,000 fine. I don't know how many of those fines have been actually implemented, but the bottom line is, you know, just be careful, you know, pay attention, and more lives would be saved in America in so many different, whether you're in an airplane, whether you're in your car on a highway. But the important part here is you're going to see a lot more construction in the state of Ohio. So get ready for this. There's going to be a whole lot more work zones out there, and it's all because of this bipartisan infrastructure bill. Now, we just got off the phone with Tim Berger, the Ohio AFL-CIO, and he said it's kind of premature. I guess they're working the components on distributing that money. It's $1.2 trillion, and Ohio's going to get a nice chunk of that. So Labor's 860 has got to be pretty excited about the future here. What on your end, what are you hearing, Colin?
So what we're hearing basically is that the state of Ohio is slated to get about $9.2 billion for roads.
Whoa.
And another $483 million for bridges.
That's a lot of money.
Yes, it is. And I'm going to tell you, though, if you look back, I believe it was 2014 or 2015, the American Society of Engineers graded our infrastructure at approximately a D-. And what's even worse is if you take a look globally, you know, we're at, it is not impressive. I think we are ranked America is ranked 28th globally.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sad state of affairs when we are 28th in the world in infrastructure.
So bottom line, it's long overdue then, right?
Oh, absolutely. There have been roads and bridges in such disrepair that they've needed attention for quite a while. And it's this unprecedented, you know, bill was decades in the making. And finally, the politicians were able to, you know, put some of the politics aside and do what this country needed. You know, this was actually a failed Trump promise when he was in office. He said he was going to rebuild America, yet he passed nothing on infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Okay, one more question here for you, Colin. We got a lot of money coming in the state of Ohio. Means a lot of projects are finally going to be done, worked on. That means we need workers. It sounds like an organizing opportunity to me. What do you think?
Absolutely. There is a highly likelihood that in the next several years, we will probably be looking to put on apprentices to man this kind of bolstered infrastructure bill. Right now, even now, our halls are fairly empty with this weather we've been having. You know, unseasonably warm and snow-free winters have bled into continued road season, which, again, also makes it a little dangerous because, like you said, we normally hammer on in the spring about work zone safety. But if you take a look around, there's still some work zones going on with the weather that we're having.
Right. So 860 has a game plan for moving forward with all this money coming in then?
Absolutely. I will say one thing about our organization. It continues to amaze me how far into the future our leadership has been looking.
Very good. Labors860.com on the move. Again, they're in the public sector. We talked about the juvenile court. We talked about the highways, work zone safety. Make sure you pay attention. Slow down in those work zones. And to Colin's point, yeah, the weather has been very, very mild considering, especially when you take a look at what's going on the East Coast. I mean, gosh, they got over a foot of snow just the other day in areas that they normally don't get that kind of snow. So enjoy it while you can. Labors860.com for more information. You keep up the fight, my brother. Keep us posted on that juvenile court situation, okay?
Thanks, Flash. Keep doing what you do, brother.
All right, that will be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Dave Meginhardt on behalf of the ULA and more. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.